Ooh. This looks interesting.
Ooh, the sound effects. This is great. This is great radio. This is like NPR. He's like pouring a drink. The ice is clinking into the glass.
You can start recording now if you haven't.
I've been recording.
Welcome to Medroom Chronicles. Join nurses and other care providers as they let you in on discussions usually reserved for the privacy of the locked medication room. In this weekly nursing podcast, the filters come off and we tell it like it is. Your hosts, nurses Adrienne Benning and Andrew Craig, are here to educate and entertain on all things in the nursing world. This podcast is intended for nursing students, nurses, nursing assistants, and other care providers. Non-medical folk will probably get a kick out of us too. If you like what you hear, subscribe and share. Happy nursing, folks. Welcome to Medroom Chronicles, guys. It is Adrienne back again, and sorry, it's been kind of a scarce month. May was a little busy for me. I had to wrap up the semester, had a bunch of stuff to do, and now it's back to business. We got the summer. We got the summer to take care of. This episode, I am bringing you a conversation that I had with my friend and travel nurse, Dan DeMonte. You may remember Dan from episode 8 of season 1. He is coming back. He is coming to us over the interwebs. And guys, we talked for over 3 hours. And while there's a lot of that that you don't need to hear, there was so much good stuff that we talked about that I am, instead of bringing you one mega epic episode, we're going to chop it into a few pieces, probably three. So let's go ahead and jump right into this conversation and come back again next week for part two. Here we go.
Oh, yeah. So I was on the radio live the other day.
That's what I saw.
It was weird. I was afraid I was going to say a bad word.
Because NPR is the opposite of Medroom Chronicles.
Yes. Although I did say on the air that there was something wonderful about a perfectly placed curse word.
Nice. There is. There really is. I agree.
Well, we have a show to do. Let's talk about some things. Do we go light or dark, Dan? Light or dark?
Light or dark.
As he sips his chai.
Let's make
it on the dark side.
Oh, I was about to say make it a light sandwich where we can just like...
Yeah, okay, well, we can make it light. We don't have to do dark.
Well, like a light sandwich. So like we'll just like get something going and then, oh, now here's the serious shit. And then the end we're like, well...
Here's the heavy meat in the middle and then we'll finish it up with a light toasting on the bread. Mm-hmm. You talked to us back early in season one. I don't remember which episode it was. Joined us. We're on season two. This will be like episode 11 of season 2. And season 1, I believe, had 18 episodes, I want to say. Yeah, so we're making our way. We're making our way through here. So let me just take a look. I want to give people the reference for what episode it was. So the episode was called Nursing, Music, and Dan. Because I'm the most creative title writer that's ever graced the iTunes podcast section.
Those are three things that
those are the only three things that we talked about, just in general. Nursing, music, Dan.
There is some truth to that.
I think there is. Okay, so you were you were kind of early on. You were one of the first people that I interviewed. So you are in episode 8. Okay, so not that early, still early. You were, you're still one of the veteran interviews. But we talked about a bunch of things. You were actually sitting on a park bench. I was so jealous of you. I remember that. I remember I was like in my room talking. Yeah, yep. Yeah, this was recorded on... I can tell you this in a minute.
I was in Costa Mesa in Orange County.
Yeah, it was like right before you went on tour. Yep, you were sitting on a park bench. I could feel the breeze, which kind of annoyed me, but also made me really jealous. So yeah, that was back. I'm almost there. Oh, actually, it was in September. So it wasn't totally frigid here yet, but it sure as shit wasn't California beach weather here. Nope. So then what I remember you telling me was that you were kind of working per diem and you were digging your hospital and you were like working a stretch and then taking some time off to tour and play music and do some things. You told us that you almost went crazy in the woods by yourself, wrote a bunch of stuff that was awesome, did a big tour of like many places. God, please don't let me ever be your promoter.
No, you did all these things and stuff.
You did things and stuff, and you did some songs.
What's next for Dan?
So yeah, what's the skinny right now? Like, what are the things and the stuff right now?
The things and the stuff right now. I haven't worked in like, oh God, it's been like a week and a half.
Can I tell you something that's going to make all the full-time nurses hate both of us? I've had the last like 5 days off. I work tomorrow and Sunday, and then I get 5 more days off.
That's how that goes.
But you know what? They'll be laughing twice as hard when they get their paychecks, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, right. And that's the thing with per diem. It's like, oh, if I don't work, I don't get paid.
Like, so. It's awesome. I can hang out on the beach all day, but I'm going to be living here soon. I'm going to be like living on the beach.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I didn't want to go to work anymore.
My checks start bouncing.
But still, there's a freedom there. So do you go through an agency? Are you like a permanent?
So I basically float between three hospitals. Yeah, three other hospitals in the San Diego area. And then I also float to three other hospice homes just because I want to.
Oh, good. And,
So they have a it's called the Staffing Resource Network, and it's just their like in-house float pool that goes to all their hospitals.
It makes me happy that you're doing hospice. I feel like you have a good heart for hospice. There are lots of people that do, but that's cool. I'm glad to hear that.
Hospice is weird out here. It's like with them, there's the worst thing I ever say is like the worst thing about working in a hospice home with all these people dying is the paperwork. Like, it's actually kind of true. Like, sometimes if you're like admitting somebody who's not on the hospice service coming into the hospice home, like, you are literally sitting at that computer from 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. doing all like checking all those boxes for Medicare stuff. And it's just like,
so instead of caring for the patient, you're doing paperwork,
doing things that a clerk could probably do. And I could be focused on being a nurse and being the face of their experience, but instead I'm stuck in the report room charting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really frustrating. Like, I know a lot of people have frustrations about the amount of charting and that the documentation for most people, it gets in the way. Like, mm-hmm. If you're spending hours of your shift charting and then, you know, people are like, why didn't my patient get a bath? Well, because I had 400,000 little boxes to put something in.
Yep.
So yeah, that's a huge frustration. So you're kind of like, you said that you're doing that because you want to, though, right? So like, despite this, you're still liking the game.
I kind of got into it, thinking going into it for the right reasons, of course. And then, but then a lot of my frustrations are shared by the full time nurses there too. You know, mm-hmm. They're stuck charting and just little things too. So they have a computer charting system. It's not Cerner because the rest of the hospital system has Cerner, but then they have some other, it's more for like home health. Because a lot of the people, the hospice service is both covers the inpatient people who are at the homes and their people who are out in the community. You know, it's just their like hospice network. So it's just little things where like that interface, you kind of chart your assessment in there. But other than that, it's just a million double and triple checks of things that if you were using Cerner or heaven forbid, if you had the money to get Epic, you would have it all just right there.
Mm-hmm.
Like meds, you'll have the paper order that the doctor, the nurse wrote and the doctor signed for all the med orders that you need. And then you have to make sure that paper order matches what's in the computer. It's like you do like these audits and stuff, which takes at least like an hour of your time.
Well, not to mention that the more you're copying that from one place to another, the greater the risk of making a mistake somewhere. Like,
yeah.
this is basic workflow and error prevention. So that sounds, that would drive me crazy. That would drive me crazy. Like, I don't
beyond those two, like the paper and the computer, then there's also the med book which you have to write everything in too. Mm-hmm. Which so you have to, like, all three of those things are like, you need to make sure that they're all in line.
I worked in the nursing home for my first semester of nursing school, and the med books I found were chaotic at best. And mm-hmm. I didn't feel comfortable. You know, there were things that, like, you couldn't quite read them. You didn't know if that was 25 migs or 15 migs, like, you know, and we didn't have all the other things to check against, but that's just as bad. It's like, there's too little data, or you're like duplicating five times for no damn good reason, which that would drive me crazy. I feel your frustration there.
What I'm always curious about is if paper charting had surprisingly less redundancy. Because it was chart by exception. So mm-hmm. if you would just go into their big Bible assessment, and if anything changed, you would change it. But otherwise, so I understand, you would just sort of sign off on it and say, like, let's just look at it. Yep, that's the same. Mm-hmm. That's the same. Okay. But now, like, they make you go through these flow sheets to do your own assessment every time. And technically, they probably don't even want you to look at the assessment from before. Which you should be doing your own assessment, of course, but
right,
like,
but also
it gives, like, you things to look for too,
right? But that's what I was gonna say. Like, you can guide your assessment based on something that may have occurred already. It doesn't mean you need to copycat, and you shouldn't be. But, like, I don't. If my patient is, like, confused, I sure shit want to see that last assignment, because I want to figure out if they were before or, like,
yeah,
if they are now. Yeah, so super super basic stuff, you'd think, but no. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, I was talking to a guy at the bar last night, actually. And I was out with a fellow University of Iowa alum.
You're talking about the juice bar, right? Because you don't drink
the
alcohol.
The juice bar. We're drinking some juices. And some fresh squeezed stuff we're talking here.
Some potato juice?
Potato juice. Mommy and daddy's happy juice. this guy, I mean, he was kind of out of his body, you know, those people.
Mm-hmm.
But he's sort of saying, do you ever worry that, like, that your career is gonna be with Industrial Revolution 2.0 and automation, that nurses are gonna be put out and, like, that's it? Like, do you believe that most of what you do could be automated? And I said, actually, a lot of what we do can be automated. But you can never get rid of – actually, I think that automation will do nothing but help nurses. If it ever gets to the point where, like, we don't have to focus on double and triple checking the med book mm-hmm. and bring – which is already – like, that technology exists to have all your information in one place, not three places.
Well, yeah, and the nursing-related technology that's out there is outpacing what hospitals are able to – keep and afford, and like there are I've seen ads online that just make me crazy. They're like beds where it's a mattress, but it's kind of on, like, a weird, I don't know how to explain it. It's like a self-boosting bed, so it's kind of like, remember, oh god, what am I going to compare this to that's going to sound, essentially it's like the mattress is circular, so that as you boost them, the mattress, it's just like,
what? Yeah, like a
steamroller. Do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, it's like a conveyor belt, but instead it's like cushioned. It's like a mattress.
So you can
you want to boost them up, So then you you can tuck a clean draw sheet underneath them and push a button, and the mattress boosts them up in bed. Think about, because the bottom line is, I think about how much time I would save just if I had someone to boost and turn with me exactly when I need it, you know? Yeah. That I'm not waiting for someone. So there are things, I agree with you. There are things, there's technology that can be automated and would be wonderful. But as we've seen, it's costly. Things break, you know, mm-hmm. like we have these, like, we rent some of our items, like some of our bariatric items. We don't own those because they're so expensive, and the repair and the upkeep is so inclusive that we rent these things from companies that bring them to us. Mm-hmm. And so there is a lot of stuff that could be automated, like with beds and medication delivery. However, I think that there are still a lot of things that nurses are needed for. And that is, you know, perhaps the stuff that is subjective and debatable, you know, like the ability to comfort someone, the ability to make them comfortable and help them sleep, the ability to like encourage them to, you know, if your robot is like, it is time for your walk. I don't want to. It is time for your walk. Like there's no human connection there. So I think there's still a value.
And also just knowing on like beyond, I know they're making computers smarter and smarter and able to pick up on like facial whatever, you know, non-verbals and things like that. But I still think that there are still some things with, I was telling the guy this last night, actually. I said, so you could have an order that technically says Q15 pain meds if you want for a patient, you know, or like every hour pain meds or something, where if you followed that order to a T, you'd snow him and probably kill him if you kept going.
And you'd never leave that room.
Yeah.
Dosing, getting more, dosing, getting, yeah. Yeah. So
it's just, it's like the, but if it would almost need, you would almost need to make sure that your orders are like,
yeah, it's that clean, critical clean, thinking behind clean it.
From day one, instead of just having that extra step of a nurse being like, well, I don't, and also like a patient who is drug seeking or something like that, but like, they're not lying when they say they're in pain and need morphine. They wholeheartedly believe that they do. It's just, well, some of them, but like how are you going to say to somebody who is just beside themselves, but they believe that they're in pain, but it's more that they're addicted. Like I would think that if that task was automated, it would go by, oh, the patient says they're in pain. The doctor's order says
right,
that they
like,
can have
how
the
do
medicine
you,
cause it's time.
How do you make you those discernments? Right.
You could do some kind of like, I don't know, some kind of like flag scale or something that it looks for the nonverbals in someone, but
right.
I've,
but
I've really
I can make, but
like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How much of that? Because you know we do. So here's instead of going down the path of why I think automation is dangerous or ineffective in some ways, I'll say that I think the most efficient use and the way to keep nurses in the profession, to keep them from getting hurt, to keep them satisfied, and to keep them from getting burned out, is to automate things that make the nurse's job easier. That's not to say that you won't need to staff as many nurses, but you know, your nurses will be more efficient. They won't be as injured as often. They're not going to call in as much because they're not going to know that they have to come into work and help boost a 600-pound patient every 25 minutes because they scoot down in the bed every time they move.
Yeah.
So I think that automating stuff is wonderful. Like, for example, our IV pumps are integrated with Epic. You know that. You've worked in the hospital that I'm in before. So it's really nice that you still need, you know, the critical thinking to make sure that the computer's setting the rate for what you want it to, but you beep, beep, scan this. It sends that information. And I don't have to spend 25 fucking minutes trying to manually set the drip rate. Like we use automation all the time already.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a matter of using it smartly. You know, smartly, is that an appropriate word to use?
Sounds,
I think that if we just have to really pay attention, like what you're saying. There are times when you need an actual human being involved in that interaction. And there are times when, really, do I need to be there to fill up your Sprite? Like, couldn't there be like some little awesome little pneumatic tube at your bedside that pops a new Sprite?
I'll bet every nurse thinks of that. Everyone having,
I know, right?
That
would be great. Like a pneumatic tube go into every bed.
Even like scheduled meds or something. Where,
yeah.
if you have like your parameters set for the blood pressure meds or something like that, like all
and it
these
can
things,
have a like a locking mechanism and a camera so that like if it's, you know, something you need to witness them taking, you say, I have video of you putting those two morphine in your pocket. No, because then we have cameras at
and
the bedside.
Blah, 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 blah,
we're getting futuristic here, but I think that even though we could take this in. Fantastical directions. Also, I think it's true. Maybe not replacing nurses entirely, but yes, I think that there are like if I could make a machine that I could just do like a Harry Potter style magic needle, a butterfly needle that I could just, it's like a Ouija board. I just hold it out and it just goes. It just, by the forces of all the supernatural, it just guides the needle right into the vein. That would be that. So yeah, we're not talking that, but I do think automation is great for a lot of things.
I bet that's out there. Some kind of like ultrasound guided
like a needle like, device, like a divining stick for a vein, like a
like if you put the arm in it, maybe it like holds it still or something, and just like ultrasounds where the vasculature is, and then just
I'll have to recruit people. That'll have to be an episode spot of like what if you could make any like magic sciencey device, what would it be? What would it do for you?
Have you guys heard of the, this is kind of moving away from the topic, but we can come back. Have you heard of the PureWick?
Have you heard
of the PureWick?
Yes. And I'm not totally against this. So describe to our listeners what the PureWick is, for those that don't know. And please be very specific.
Okay. I'll use the D word then. It is basically this dildo that has a padded top to it, and you hook it up to suction, and then for people who, if they're peeing the bed, it might make their butt sore worse, or just if they're incontinent and they want to prevent breakdown, they basically like suction it to their vagina. Low suction, granted, very low suction. And yeah, you're not supposed to like seal it on them, but most of the time it's like you like kind of start at the front of the vagina and just like put it in there. It's like,
so essentially it's like an absorbent pad hooked up to suction that goes up against the against the labia and the perineum. Yeah. Perineum. I'm a nurse that doesn't know
the
how to say
the perianum.
The periarea. A little mop head, and you put it up against the perianum. And then you hook it up to suction, and then when they piddle, then it
sucks up
kind of absorbs and sucks up the piddle. So essentially, this is like the female version of the male condom calf. Which is exactly pretty what much, it sounds yeah. like, where you put a condom on a flaccid penis, which is always a treat for any nurse to try to accomplish. That's something that they don't teach you in nursing school. Yes, there has to be very specific technique involved there. And sometimes the anatomy does not make the technique easy to execute in the way you would like to. In any case, yeah, so it's like a condom, but it has an intentional hole at the end that hooks up to a tube that drains into a catheter bag. So this essentially is what the ladies get.
It's friggin' brilliant, but, you know.
But so talk to me about the pros and the cons of this device, because I'm so curious. We don't have these. I haven't worked with them yet.
There was one time I think someone had the suction a little too high on somebody.
Oh, no.
And it actually and gave them some.
A pale hickey?
A pale wee. Oh, God.
Oh yeah, God, that's much. Terrible.
But they're very effective though.
Anything, you need to make sure that the level of suction is appropriate, and you should be checking it, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You change it out if it gets soiled or something.
Sure.
Bowel movement or something, but
sure. So is this like a what am I trying to say? Like how many times can that patient urinate before that?
They change it out daily.
Okay. So daily it needs to be changed.
It's supposed to change it out daily.
Okay. So unless it's stooled on, right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So then does this also help with women who, for example, might be menstruating? I mean, because there's still periodic cleaning being going on, right?
That actually, I think
because it's kind of going over the entire general area, yeah. Right? Like it's not okay.
Although I think usually the clientele who is using this may be past the age of menstruation.
True. Yeah. However, I was thinking like brain injury patients and that sort of thing who may still. But true, you're working with patients who are typically outside of the age of fertility. Mm-hmm. So, okay, fair enough. So then, so the suction could be too high.
There's nothing really like holding it there unless you put a diaper on the patient.
So like potentially.
I was, oh, go ahead.
Well, and then you also have to consider, if you're putting a brief on that patient, is their skin, do they need their skin to air? Like, is the whole reason to do this because you don't want wet, hot, like, moisture all over their skin, wet, hot moisture all over their skin? Like,
well, that was something I was always taught back working with you, and how they would always say, oh, we don't do diapers on patients in beds anymore because it's like, just makes it worse for breakdown because you're just holding that pee right up against their skin. That's why we have those white chucks now. That's super absorbent.
There are a few instances where I will still use briefs in bed. Like, I had a patient who just recently liked when we cut them up the side, like cut the leg holes open so that she could use it like a really big pad, sort of. Like, we were kind of doing that. And then also, you know, sometimes I'll do it with patients if they're scooting around a lot in bed. And I think that not having a brief on just means that they're going to have it in 10 times more places on their body than if they just had a brief on. So yeah, there are a few circumstances where we still do.
So you're telling me that you critically think in the situation and apply it on a person by person basis?
Actually, no, this could be totally automated. And if it fits, if it shits, it fits. I don't know.
Let me apply your brief.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me apply your Pure Wick.
So yeah, that's interesting. We haven't seen those yet. I also have been really intrigued by the female urinal, which other nurses that have traveled have sent me photos of those, where it essentially is like a urinal, but instead of having just like a hole at the top that you can insert the device into, it's more of a, like what you're describing, where it kind of covers the entire pelvic area.
Yes,
just like you're gesturing as though as though you're holding a handful of tangerines.
I'm taking full advantage of the video that we're filming, but not going to use right now. I'm just making
the pantomiming of devices. the pantomiming of a condom catheter.
Well, actually, when I was working in New York, there was this aide who used a male urinal on a woman. She just like, all right, let's do it, and she just like, and like.
I mean, technically, if I was like traveling on the road and like the choice was like a shitty, dirty gas station bathroom or a urinal, I could make a urinal work.
Yeah. Put it in the right.
I mean, it's not like we pee Niagara fucking Falls out of there. Like, I mean, granted, we can't write our name in the snow, but it doesn't mean that we're fucking animals.
It's not like the cone setting on the gardening hose.
No, it's not. We just water all your flowers at once. No, not like that. It's not at all. Oh my God. Yeah, so I'm a little jealous of that because, you know, we have, but like any device, there are things that are great about these devices and things that still, I'm sure, suck. Like, for example, if your patient's really squirmy, that thing might not stay in place. Or like, if your patient is repeatedly incontinent of stool, that may not, if you're changing it every, so are these devices expensive? Well, yeah, you'd be changing anyway, but the question is, are you changing out a device that's more expensive? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In the grand scheme, which we don't always think about at the bedside, is using this more expensive product actually saving us money by decreasing, you know, day cubes and skin issues and like, so yeah,
I am curious how much it costs. I don't know. We don't have those raw numbers yet.
Well,
I haven't met as many nurses as there were back when I worked with you guys where they'd be like, yeah, that Meplax is like $20 per dressing or more.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. You know, it's like, that's not as, maybe it's harder to get those numbers, or it's just something that they don't think about as much.
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll try and figure that out, though. I am curious.
I'm just curious. Are there any other devices or supplies that you use that maybe you didn't see when you were here? I'm just curious. I mean, maybe not. I know I'm putting you on the spot here.
That's pretty much the main one is the PureWick.
I mean, that's cool. Yeah. I've seen like diagrams. I can't remember where. I think somebody sent it to me like thinking it was kind of funny, like, oh my God, look at this. Is this for real? But I'm kind of like, oh, like that kind of looks like maybe under some circumstances it would really work. So,
well, just like how I thought when we were using swab caps, like that was the most freaking brilliant thing. Like someone made, someone made at least $1 million.
Yeah, like the little disinfecting caps that we put on the edge of all of our IV ports. Yeah.
But our previous, do they know where, can I like say our previous hospital?
Yeah, that's fine.
Steer away from that.
As long as we're not talking crap.
Oh. Well, I mean, when we worked at Iowa, it was, that's the only place that I've ever, oh no, never mind. So I saw the orange swab caps at Iowa. Then I went to Milwaukee, you have the green ones. Yeah, they have the green ones too, which is awesome. Do that? You like hang them on the pole where you have like there. Just
I'll take a strip and I'll hang them on the clippy part of my badge so that I just have them that way. If I run out of them in the room, I've got backups. I'm one of those people that like say I draw up a medication out of a vial with a needle. I don't like taking that needle into the patient room because I'm not using the needle unless it's like a sub-Q injection or something, which then I have to. But if I'm drawing it up with a needle and then just using the lure lock, I don't take the needle in with me. I'll put one of those the caps that are like the male equivalent the little green screw that goes on the end of the syringe. And then I immediately sharps the needle because I've, you know, taken on patients before and you roll them over to check their backside and you're like, oh, there's a fucking needle in the bed. Whose head do I have to bash? So I don't ever want to be that person that like, and I work at night, so sometimes it's dark. I don't want to I want a zero risk game. So I use those little caps on the edge of my syringes so that I can keep it clean and don't even take it in the room. And if I have an orientee or a student, I'm like, don't even take it in the room. Unless you're going to poke them with a needle, don't take a needle in the room. Yeah.
I'm a little too lazy, but I agree with you.
Well, I mean, where our med room is, like the syringe that I take out to draw it up is in the drawer right next to the caps. So I would have to go out of my way to not make it easy for myself. You know what I mean? So everybody's got their own workflow based on what's around you. But that's my personal opinion. That's how I operate. That's just my little trick. But, you know, other people don't have to worry about forgetting things because they're not forgetful. I don't know.
What are we talking about?
Hi, Dan. Welcome. My name's Adrienne Benning. This is the MedRoom Chronicles Nursing Uncensored podcast. Welcome.
Sorry, I sun down a little bit sometimes.
That's okay. I also recognize this as your morning. And have you finished your first cup of chai yet?
It's getting there, actually. I don't have not that much left. Oh,
well,
good story for you, speaking of sundowning.
Okay, yeah.
So as my with my current job choice, I'll get calls, you know, whenever saying, hey, we need people to come in and work tonight. Sometimes they'll offer incentive or double time or whatever they need to get people in, you know. They send out the mass texts at like 8 p.m. saying, we need someone to come in and work ASAP. And I said, I'm not really doing anything tonight. So I called them back and said, hey, I could come in at 11 if you need. And I said, why? I'm just curious, why do you need somebody? Oh, they offer double time too. So I was like, oh, fuck yeah, I'm going to go in. and they said, yeah, one of the nurses is going home sick. So we need somebody to come in and take their place. I said, okay, fair enough. So I go in. Do you want to know why the nurse was going home sick?
Oh, God, do I?
Because of the patient that I was picking up.
Oh my God. That's like the worst nightmare. So it was like a save yourself sickness. It was like get me the fuck out of here or what? So
this patient was the nicest man during the day, but they had known that he had some baseline dementia and that he sundowns, but no one could have fathomed that he would like with a snap, just come out of the bathroom and start flinging shit at the nurses and at the nurse and the aide, just throwing shit at them.
Oh, no. This is what she set you up to walk into. She was like, I have a stomach ache and I need to go home.
I wish that was the case, but the nurse actually did get a little bit of, like they were actually, they should have gone home. Because then they were, so like code green was called to like get this guy back into bed. Big, strong old man, of course. They're wrestling him back to bed. Nurse is a guy, actually, too. So it's like two guys
and wrestling this guy down. And even if he's not a big dude, anyone with like sundowning suddenly takes on the strength of like 10 grown men.
Seriously.
Like even if they only weigh like 90 pounds. So anyway, so this is a big dude to begin with.
They get him in bed. And as he's like laying in the bed, like perpendicular to the bed, he all of a sudden just like kicks the nurse square in the face. And the nurse is like beside himself, like, oh, holy shit. Like he got clocked.
Oh my God.
And so they sent, so the nurse went to the ED to get cleared and stuff. And then in that time they called me and they're like, yeah, someone's going home sick. We need to come in. So I come in and they're like, yeah, so this guy just kicked his nurse in the face and threw shit at him. So we're sending him home.
Welcome. Thank you for coming. Thank you. You can get a report from that person over there with the red eyes and the shit stains on their clothes.
Right. I wish I could have. He was still in the
ED. If there's anything I can do to help you out, let me know.
He was still in the ED.
Oh my God.
So then he got cleared. No, you know, just really bad headache.
Okay, good. Even though I joke, I'm glad he's okay.
Yeah. But then so they gave the guy enough Haldol to knock him out. And then he wakes up. Yeah. So he wakes up at like 5 a.m. and I'm like, do you remember anything that happened last night? I was like,
he's like, hi, my name's Joe. What's your name? Exactly. Nice to meet you. And you're like, oh.
I was like, you're being kind of
You don't remember hulking out on us.
He's like, I'm the nicest guy you'll ever meet. He said that. He was like, yeah, really?
And that's what's so crazy about.
Next night, pulled a butter knife on somebody.
See, and this is what. So I started my hospital career on neuro. So I saw a lot of, you know, there's differentiation between delirium and dementia and like all of these different kind of little subcategories of people losing their shit at night. And I've been a night shift worker this pretty much my entire hospital career. And so, yeah, it's always astounding, especially when you see patients like multiple nights in a row. And it's literally like it doesn't matter what season it is. The second the sun is gone, it's like somebody flips a switch and they lose their shit. Like I took care of a man once who I could not keep clothes on him. I could not keep blankets on him. And then I go in there and he's like naked Gollum shivering in the bed. And I'm like, I've literally been putting blankets on you every 38 seconds for the last 9 hours. Like, I can't do this anymore. Like, swatting me away. Next morning, I walk into the room. He's sitting at the side of the bed, legs crossed, reading the paper with his glasses on the tip of his nose.
Of course he is.
Are you my nurse? Can I order breakfast? I was like, my fucking God. I have been trying to keep your pants on you all night. Well,
he's laying in bed.
Yeah. Totally. But it's so weird because it literally is like from the minute it's dark outside and the second, like you're praying for the sun. It's like you're waiting for the sun to crest over the horizon. You're like, please, Lord, let the sun come up early today, because then they're fine and they have no memory of it. And it's just that blows my mind every time. It doesn't matter how much I understand about the brain and science. That is one of those things that I feel like I'm the first caveman, like watching the sunrise. I'm like, oh my God, this is the most amazing thing that man has ever witnessed. Because yeah, people get crazy. People that are ordinarily like trying to set you up with their grandson, and then a few hours later, they're literally trying to kill you. Like they're literally trying to bash your head with their call light.
Because they literally believe like
that you're gonna hurt them.
This stuff is happening to them.
Why are you in my house? Get out of my house. Well,
I was listening to a Joe Rogan podcast the other day about, and he had this like sleep scientist on, mm-hmm. and he was spouting some facts about delirium tremens, and I haven't really researched beyond what this guy said, but I believe him. It feels good to believe him.
Logical. Yeah,
it feels right. that when you go into DTs, it's like when you're an alcoholic, you're not getting as much REM sleep as you need. That's why when you have a drunken night, you'll have these crazy dreams, because when your body gets done blowing off the alcohol, it catches up for lost time and does this really crazy REM sleep. And so you have these really crazy dreams to like get you back to baseline. When you go through DTs, it's like your brain is showing like the same signs as you're having dreams.
Got it. It's like firing in all these crazy ways.
But you're awake. So it's like you're in a dream state while you're awake, and your brain is just trying to do these things just to get you.
It's
back
trying to catch up.
I don't know how that correlates with the seizures you can have from DTs. I never really learned that. I probably did and forgot.
If I was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and I had to make an educated guess, I would say that probably that's like on the road, on the yellow brick road to having seizures, because you're basically fucking with your electrical system is what it comes down to. You need an electrician for that. No, but it does make sense. It's like your brain is without, you think about the way alcohol depresses your nervous system. And then when you don't have that to kind of smooth out the sensation, then you end up with all sorts of crazy electrical. I don't know.
I guess your brain.
If there's a physiologist listening to this, comment below and tell us how this shit works. Because you know we're educated professionals. Sounds reasonable. Sounds plausible.
It feels good. It feels right, what we're saying.
That's what I'm going to say from now on. Whenever somebody tells me something and I need evidence, I'm just going to go with it. I'm just like, that feels good.
That's like classic, like Stephen Colbert kind of stuff.
Well, isn't that also how our current administration is running? Oh!
Oh, look out. It feels right, man.
It feels right.
Don't get me started on any of that funny business.
No, that's a whole other podcast. Oh my god, my microphone just slipped away from me. That's the first time it's ever moved. It just went.
Aww.
My microphone lost its ability to stand up on its own. Okay, there we go. We're fixed.
Poor guy.
Yep.
Yeah, just checking.
Yep, sure can. Are you doing research on the next electrifying topic you're going to present to us?
No, just figured I'd have it there ready to go.
So I gotta put you on the spot one more time before we wrap this up. So what do you feel?
We didn't talk about anything. We're wrapping this up.
Well, no, we don't have to wrap anything up. I'm thirsty. I gotta go get something to drink. Can you hold on a second?
Mama's thirsty.
Can you hold on a second? Can you do a monologue for the people? Can you do like some freestyle spoken word hospital raps or something while I'm gone?
Sure.
Or you don't have to. I'll be right back.
Sure. Yeah.
Instituting the talent portion of the show. Every professional that comes to talk to me needs to do some kind of talent either that or they have to do the swimsuit portion, right? No. You either play the trombone or you come out in your board shorts.
Oh, yeah.
So, and in my defense, from the way I left the room, when I say let's wrap this up, it's because I'm used to talking to Andrew, and when I say let's wrap this up, it then takes us about 45 to 55 minutes to actually wrap it up. So I wasn't trying to stifle you at all.
No, I'm sure.
I was just like, I need sugar and iciness in a cup. So
you guys are both very opinionated.
Yeah.
And indeed. I would still say, Age, you're probably one of the wittiest people I've ever known.
Really?
You really are.
That's so funny. Thank you. That's so funny to me because I was a very introverted kid. I was a very introverted 20s. I'm introverted to a fault, but then I have these little things that I like to do that are very not introverted.
I don't know, but just the way that your mind works, you're always a few steps ahead with a joke. Like you always, like you always just have the perfect thing. Like I still remember when we went to go see, I'm not gonna name names. When we went to go see an artist who's a friend of you guys's, and you said, "Oh, Dan, you're gonna love him." And then he does like some like the craziest shit on stage, and it's like and like stream of consciousness. You said it was like I said, hey Dan, it's just like kind of drizzling outside. You walked outside and got hit with like a fucking fire hydrant,
like an open fire hydrant. Yeah, basically.
Like, oh, just a little bit of water.
I have a strong sense of visuals. I think it was because I grew up watching like Warner Brothers cartoons. So in my mind, like really what you see is just real life. What I see is like Roadrunner style shit happening. Yeah.
And huge hamburgers.
Really, yeah. My life is just one big cartoon. Wow. Like you're all expendable. You'll just come back to life in the next scene.
I went down a rabbit hole of like Tom and Jerry memes.
I have not been down this road.
That show had some crazy shit. Like all those shows had crazy shit.
Oh my God, I have to tell you. So I'm gonna plug another podcast. I always talk about things that I like on the show, and then I say, by the way, they don't know who I am. So like I hope they like the feedback from me. But there is a podcast called Raised by TV. And it is two people that are kind of, I think they're close to my age. They're comedians, but they have all these episodes about classic 80s and 90s TV. And I have never been so in love with two people that I've never met or seen because I listen to these episodes and it takes me back to my childhood and I laugh. And when they can't think of a name or a song or something, I'm like yelling into my phone, like, it's this, it's no, no, that was Mr. Belvedere. Like, I get really passionate. I love this podcast because I was one of those kids that, you know, I grew up watching a lot of sitcoms, and I still love watching the shit. Oh my God. But that's my,
there's like a website that has, it's made to look like an 80s.
Oh yeah.
With just like, with like old 80s stuff playing.
Yeah, I found it around Christmas time. It's called like BetamaxXmas.com or something like that. But yeah, all it is it's a feed that pulls all of this stuff from the 80s, 70s, 80s, and 90s and plays it. So the facade of the webpage is that of like an old TV, like a tube TV in a basement.
It'll be like a back.
And there's like posters. Yeah. And like it looks like the basement that you had when you were a kid in the 80s, or your cousin had, or your friend down the street. Uh-huh. And all it does is it just clicks in a loop through these YouTube videos of like old commercials, yeah, news, and none of it's linear or cohesive. So you might get to watch like 2.5 minutes of Murder, She Wrote. But what I liked about it was there was one year I couldn't be with my family. I found this website. I clicked it on. I was laying on the couch with an Afghan. Christmas tree light was lit up. And I'm watching, like I'm dozing off to the sound of like my childhood, basically. So it was kind of like this meditative experience. It was fun. Anyway, it was fun.
It's,
so yeah,
very melancholy shit when you're just, yeah, when you're just in that, when you're just in that moment of Christmas, there's kind of a, there's kind of a, yeah, there's this like like the profound, like just this like profound sort of like sadness, but then you're still finding some way to like of not being able,
yeah,
to be,
but then you're also like, oh, that was comfortable, like I can just be, yeah, comfortable for anyway. So it's very much like that. So listening to them talk about all these TV shows that I would like race home to watch after school, or like I had a crush on that boy when I was like 12 and now he's like an evangelical preacher now, like, or you know, I don't know, I just think it's cool to see old cameos. But they have it like an anyway, I'm gushing over them, but Raised by TV, it's the best podcast. And I think if you were a child of the 80s or 90s, they even get a little into the 90s, like Nickelodeon, Ren and Stimpy, like all the MTV shows. It's so good. It's like, I'm telling you now, turn off this podcast right now and go listen to Raised by TV and then come back to us later. I just love
Actually, the rest of this podcast, we're going to turn on one of their podcasts.
And just listen to it. And so
on their commentary.
No. We're going to get back to business. So I want to talk
about nursing. We don't have to talk about nursing anymore.
All of it we could technically write off under the title of like self-care, because as nurses, we need to find those things that have nothing to do with nursing to like keep us sane. And you for sure have your music that you play every night in the old timey bar with the saloon doors, right? Because that's kind of what vibe I was getting. That was great.
The piano sounds be on like every a show. Carnival and the microphone smells like beer.
So yeah, you're gonna have to come on the show and basically play music during the interlude while I like go to the bathroom and refill my glass.
Play the Maple Leaf Rag by Scott Joplin. I've been working on it.
We're nurses. We talk about nursing things, not just the 80s.
I haven't been
this
a nurse
all 80s weekend.
Well, I was born in 1991, but that's fine.
You had to say that. You had to say that out loud.
I was a Nickelodeon kid. Love Doug.
Okay. I mean, I'm a little bit older than you, but we can appreciate the same things. I got some of the more adult jokes that you didn't get, maybe.
That's true. You could watch a Pixar movie, and I was still like, they're so cute and fun. And I'm like, I love this
complex interpersonal relationship that exists between these two protagonists.
Between Buzz and Woody.
What about, do you watch any, somebody asked me this the other day, who was it?
Oh, medical dramas?
I think it was like, yeah, or any medical related shows. Like, do you watch any of that stuff?
All I've been watching recently is BoJack Horseman. And
is documentary style following neurosurgeons, right?
If you want to talk about mental health, BoJack Horseman is fucking great.
Okay, all right, fair enough. I've not seen it. I've heard it's hysterical, but like I'm only now emerging from the school fog. Like I literally have been in school every semester for the last like years.
But I'm not a big shows guy. I don't really.
I watched Grey's Anatomy for a little while. Well, I think I watched most of the series. I tried watching it after I went to nursing school. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't. I kept like compulsively getting up to go fold laundry and stuff. So I was like, clearly I'm not interested in this right now. I watched Nurse Jackie for a little bit. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not interested. I'm not into them. I don't know why. And it's, you know, some people are like, oh, I get so upset because they're not real. Well, yeah, of course they're not real. They're not, you know, they're not consulting with nursing assistants when they're writing their scripts. Yeah, like
it's just like any other show about cops or firemen or whatever.
But I guess where I was going with it. I guess I was going with that is there's been a lot of talk about over the years about what these shows do to the public perception of healthcare and how it should be and how that's different from like what really happens in real life. Like the kind of the cornerstone example is when someone on a TV show is like coded, okay, the cardiac arrest, few compressions, some breaths, give some epi, shock him. And then in the next scene, they're like talking to you.
And they're like,
I'm so glad they brought me back. Yeah. So, and you know what? I can't remember what the statistics are, but the statistics of survival after a cardiac arrest are not good. Not only are they not great, but they're also not as such that you're just like extubated and fine
there's a quality of life piece there too. You might have brought back their heart, but. You know,
and then, right? And but then how long were they without? Exactly. Like, what other things happened? Like, yeah. So I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about how the media or TV has influenced the way people think their healthcare should be given? Like, have you ever encountered anything where people have maybe felt like you weren't doing what you were supposed to be doing because it wasn't like something they saw on TV?
Well, the opposite of that. One time, I had a patient who said to me straight face, and I know they believe this. They're like, I didn't realize how much the nurses actually did versus like doctors.
Oh yeah. Yep. I've had people say that to me too. Yeah. Like, wow, you do that too? Well,
because on TV it's like the doctors at the bedside.
The doctors getting your patient up to go for a walk with their three chest tubes.
And just walking and talking to them. Like, so how you doing here? How are the
kids? How's the family?
Yeah. In real life, it's like, hey, how you doing? Okay, I got 60 more people.
Fingers am I holding up? Two. Peace.
Zing.
That was
one for me to deal with. And
that was something that Charity Nebbe mentioned on the spot that I did on Talk of Iowa last week, was that a lot of people don't have any frame of reference for what a nurse has to deal with. You're like in that situation where, you know, you're in the hospital or someone you care about is in the hospital or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever brings you to that space where you're actually witnessing that your nurse is coming into your room and she's like I know that I do a good job at work, but I probably look like a hot mess when I'm busy. I'm like sweating, my hair's stuck to my face, like, you know, I'm rumpled, I have shit pouring out of every pocket. Once I empty the trash can, because if you're a nursing student, a new nurse, an old nurse, any kind of nurse, if you put a shitty Chucks or a shitty wipe or a shitty diaper or anything shitty in a trash can, and then you leave it next to their bed or in their room so that they get to smell their own shit all night long, I will come find you. I will get that shitty trash can and I will make you chart sitting next to said trash can for the entirety of your charting, because nobody is above taking out the trash. Take out the shitty trash. It is part of your job. I saw some debate online that was like, nurses shouldn't have to clean. We should remain aseptic. You should be clean. Have some extra scrubs in your locker. That does not mean that you're like, that trash can is full of shit. This room smells, and I'm going to say shit about 50 more times because it is disgusting. It is shit. Don't leave it in your patient's room. Okay. That has been a public service announcement from your friends here at Modern Chronicles Nursing Uncensored. Thank you.
And I need to reiterate when you went into that voice there, it reminded me. I think I said this in the last podcast too. I love your disclaimer at the beginning. It's like, if you think we're talking about you, we're not.
We're not.
I love it. That's like,
well, because half the stories I tell, I remember the details of the story, but I don't necessarily remember the patient. I don't remember their name. I maybe remember, sometimes you have those patients that you remember everything from their name to how many pimples they have on their butt. Like, you remember every detail about them. Other people, I'm like, I remember this happened, but I couldn't tell you more. So really, it helps to be really forgetful, because then you're less likely to violate HIPAA because you really don't know who the fuck that was.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of the stories I tell are from anywhere from 6 weeks ago to 12 years ago.
And it helps for me having different hospitals to pull from too, and just like crazy shit.
Yeah. So do you think you'll continue on this travel nursing path? Like, do you think you'll kind of stay local? Do you want to go other places? Like, what are your dreams? Tell me about your mother.
You want my dreams?
Yes. Tell me about your dreams.
So this per diem thing, I'm in love with the flexibility of it. And if the cost of living in San Diego was like half what it is, I would stay here for forever, if I'm being honest.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really care about the beach. I don't even care about the weather down here. But just the fact that the nursing jobs are high paying and crazy flexible and safe, it's just like, you can't go wrong.
So do they have laws about ratios in California? I don't know much about
that. Yeah, it's the only state that has laws about ratios.
Mm. Nurses, go to California.
Because nurses back in the 90s marched and got legislation passed, supposedly with not as... Cause it's hard to quantify that data of outcome versus patient load. You can get like nurse satisfaction pretty easily of like...
Right.
How stressed they feel or whatever, but in terms of and what are outcomes, like readmits to the hospital, like things like that. But there's just, it's so multifactorial. It's hard to get data in any direction saying that. But they, the nurses just went for it back in the 90s and got these laws passed that said the nurse, depending on your level of care, like ICU, 1 to 2 patients, PCU, step down 3 to 4, med-surg 4 to 5, or 3 to 5.
Yeah.
Tele always 3 to 4. So, but then also having, besides that, so each nurse has, so for me, PCU, progressive care, step down, whatever, 3 to 4 patients on tele. When you're, so you're like, you, when you go on break, there has to be a nurse, because they, it's like rules of this number of patients to this number of nurses. So not only will you have a non-patient carrying charge nurse to break people, you'll also often have a resource nurse who is just there, not taking patients either, also just breaking nurses and helping out on the floor. So you have two non, at on a busy floor, you have two nurses that are non-patient carrying to help out with things, help out with admissions, mm-hmm. help out with whatever, and make sure that the floor is always properly staffed versus just saying, hey, can you watch my three people? And you'll have, you know, technically
six patients until they come back. Right. Yeah. Six patients, three of which you really may not know very well, if at all. Yeah, so that's great. I remember years ago when I first started at the U, we always had a designated resource, both for the nursing assistants and the nurses. And it wasn't someone who was non-patient care, but it was at least someone who wasn't the charge nurse that was knowledgeable enough that they could answer most questions so that the charge nurse, who often had their own patients, could focus less on answering some of the like easier stuff that maybe new nurses or nurses who don't have the answers don't know who to ask.
I don't think they ever had that in my time there.
No, this was, I mean, this was like within my first 4 years at the hospital. I don't remember. And then once I went to the float pool, I didn't really see it being used anywhere else. That might be a good quality improvement project to see how people feel about having someone designated as like resource. That would be someone who kind of knows the unit, so that say you're like, hey, which tubing do I use for this? You don't have to necessarily pull your charge nurse out of like figuring out assignments or going to bed huddles or whatever. So, I mean, that's one strategy. I think it would be ideal, you know, that every unit would have like at least one non-patient care staff at the very minimum to help make sure nurses are getting breaks. 12 hours is a long fucking time to not eat a meal. You know, and I think even sometimes in some shifts, you need two meals with the number of calories you're burning, with the amount of running you're doing.
Okay, well, maybe this is a weird place to stop, but we have to stop somewhere, and the conversation just keeps going. So, come back next week for part 2 of this episode with Dan. And in the meantime, go ahead and go to medroomchronicles.com, listen to some previous episodes. If you haven't heard the episode with Dan, go back and listen to it. Season 1, Episode 8. You can find us on Spreaker, Stitcher, iTunes, iHeartRadio, pretty much anywhere you can find a podcast. So, go listen. Happy nursing. Here at MedRoom Chronicles, we may be uncensored, but we are not unfiltered. Protected health information has been changed and concealed to comply with HIPAA of 1996. The things we talk about are combinations of years of experience with thousands of patients, things we've read, stories we've heard. If you think we're talking about you, trust me, we're not. Also, we're real nurses here to provide accurate and helpful info, but don't take us as fact without doing your own research. Refer to your state's Board of Nursing, Practice Acts, and your institution's policies and procedures if you have questions about your practice. Lastly, our very strong opinions are ours alone and do not reflect those of our employers or educational institutions. Thanks for listening, and happy nursing, guys.